Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Absolute Rally. I say welcome back, we've had a couple of week break. Have you missed us? Have you wondered where we were? We did tell you that we'd be disappearing for a couple of weeks. It's all been very quiet, hasn't it? Not much been going on really. You know, we've all had a bit of a sleepy time and everything's been parked up. My talking nonsense, of course I'm talking nonsense. It was Circuit of Ireland and two boys that were there were my right and left hands. I'm not too sure whether I can call them that. That sounds really dodgy and wrong. But still, I'm going to call them that for the purpose of this particular intro. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Jack Bengen.
Hello, Tony. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. Good to be back.
Yeah, and there's Ryan back there as well. Now, you two boys were at the Circuit of Ireland, and I realise I'm probably going to have to keep you both on a leash because you're probably chomping at the bit to get your stuff out here at Circuit of Ireland. Now, I wasn't there. I was following things on... there were so many different media outlets, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later on. But Circuit of Ireland, I'm going to hand it to Jack first, because Jack seems to appear everywhere. He is the perennial. It's almost like, you know, when you hear about these celebrities in inverted commas at the letter opening, anything that there's something going on, Jack Bengen appears to be there now. But that's good, because that's your job, Jack. So, Circuit of Ireland, from your point of view, young man.
Oh yeah, it's a brilliant weekend. You know, if you were watching the live stream, I think that's what you're referring to, Tony, that I was doing a bit of work with John Desborough and Trevor Agnew on that. But yeah, fantastic weekend. The stages were incredible, and it was obviously a great result for sort of a home favourite in Craig Breen to take the win. So yeah, it was my first experience where I was rallying, so I'm already planning my trip back next year, and really looking forward to getting back to Ireland as soon as possible, really. I thought it was fantastic.
A very subtle couple of name drops there. Well done as well, Jack. You're doing really well. Now, I did watch the live stream. I listened to TRC Radio, and I watched the coverage on Eurosport, and I just struggle to remember, right, an event, and certainly in modern times, that had so many different media outlets and so much coverage.
No, I think it was great to see maybe what might be the future of rallying in terms of coverage. You know, we'd maybe hope to see those sort of things coming from WRC, but it genuinely seemed the Circuit of Ireland with the live feed was at the cutting edge of what could be the future of a rally coverage, with drone coverage and obviously very knowledgeable studio guests to dissect what was happening.
very well done. Yeah. See what he did there,
yeah.
Jack.
But genuinely,
I suppose the advent of technology and stuff like that, and I feel like a bit of an old fart even saying this, but having likes of 3G and 4G now on your phone does give you that option. You know, I went out and had a bacon butty on Saturday morning in the local Greasy Spoon, and while I was there, I watched the live stream, and then when I got in the car, I put ERC radio on, and that streamed through my car, so I was listening to Julesy. So, you know, there was no excuse for not particularly covering this event, but we've got Chris Ingram coming up a little bit later on in the programme, and this is something that I mentioned to him, and I don't know about you, Jack, but I just, there just seemed to be, the result was really, really important, don't get me wrong, you know. Craig Breen, obviously friend of the show and everything else, and we're going to have Scott Martin coming up, of course, a bit later on in the programme. But there seems to be so much more than just winners and losers. As cliches as it sounds, there were so many little battles going on, there were so many stories unfolding. Did it feel like that when you were doing the coverage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it was mainly because of the three major championships that were involved, and we also had the Northern Irish Championship involved as well, so there's basically four really good championships in the British, the European and the Irish tarmac. So wherever you look throughout the order, whether it was the top 10 or whether it was a bit further down, there was some fantastic battles going on. And I think we've hopped back to the entry so many times and the quality of the entry, but that really created the battles further down. You know, you're not looking at sort of amateurs further down, you're looking at brilliant drivers and still in brilliant cars, so it was great to see.
I was going to say, we've got Chris Ingram coming up a little bit later on. Of course, he was doing his thing in the juniors and did very well indeed. But as I say, the comment I made to him is that, and like what I've just said to Jack, it winners and losers, yes, of course, they're important, but there was so much quality and there was so many other things going on in that rally, and there was so many, you know, it was the conditions, which of course you two guys were there and you've seen it. You know, I had one person say to me, running a couple of cars over there, say they were very, very shocked that, for instance, Friday wasn't declared as a wet rally, right?
Yeah, it was changing constantly. It really was. So it started out, I mean, particularly on the Friday, the road started out wet, but then drying very, very quickly. So actually, you know, we had a number of drivers were caught out by actually how dry the first few stages were by the time they got over them, because their information from people I had in the stages, etc., was that it'd be quite wet. So that dried out, but then of course at lunchtime it did start to rain very, very, very heavily, and certainly the last batch of stages on Friday had a lot of standing water, and as we know with Irish rallying, that generally means quite a lot of mud on the stages as well in places, because you can cut the corner. And from the evidence we saw at the weekend, in Europe, corner cutting is very, very prevalent. It happens all the time. There's certain places in Ireland where it isn't an advantage. But what we actually saw was some of the European drivers cutting everything still, which only increased the amount of mud on the road. So, you know, and certainly again on Saturday, it was very much a wet, dry rally, and the conditions were changing all the time. And one thing that I saw been at the end of a few of the stages was that Pirelli had something like 8 or 9 different tyres available. And I must have seen about 6 of them at the end of one stage.
Wow. So tyre choice again, we're back in, you know, we said this at the beginning of the season almost, we suppose we'd just BRC, but now the tyre manufacturers appear to be buying back into rallying in a big way and using rallying again the way perhaps they did before, rather than just producing a tyre and saying, right, there's your tyre, you crack on.
Yeah, I mean, very much so. Certainly, like I said, from a Pirelli point of view, they had a huge range of tyres, whereas it was quite funny. I was stood at the end of that same stage with Dick Cormack from DMAC, and Dick was like, well, it's quite simple for us in these conditions. We have a soft one or we have a really soft one, and that's their choice, whereas Pirelli had this incredible range of tyres where, quite honestly, even some of the drivers didn't really seem to be sure what the difference was between an RWK as it was and an RWK A and an RWK B, and there was all these different configurations that the drivers were trying to get their head around.
You've just kind of took me where I wanted to go next, so it was very nicely done. We'll segue quite well into this. Now, I suppose you could say it was a fantastic result, obviously, for Craig, but were we robbed of a battle with Elvin? Obviously we were, but the big concern we all had was with regards to the tyres, but he seemed to lay that one to rest very early on, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, over the first couple of stages, Elvin's pace was incredible, genuinely incredible. You know, he hasn't done a lot of tarmac mileage in an R5 car on D-Max, and you know, he just came in and literally blew everybody away over the first two stages. Having said that, I don't think he would have had it all his own way. I mean, the unofficial rumours were that halfway through the Glen stage, the long third stage of the rally where he had the problem, was that Craig was actually slightly up on him in there. So, you know, obviously Craig was getting used to the R5 Citroen, and I think there would have been a battle, but certainly Elvin's pace, and when he came back on Saturday, again, the times he was setting were stunning. So he's definitely a driver that's moved up a gear this year. We've talked about that already, but I certainly don't think the tyres were holding him back.
I think the other thing, Jack, as well, is that obviously we forget that it was, I'm going to attempt it, Kajan Kajtanovic's only second visit. Yeah, laugh it up.
Nearly, Tony.
It was. Yeah. I thought it was close. It's just because you've been in the studio now with John Derensbury, who's corrected you on your pronunciations off camera. But no, in all seriousness, you know, it was only his second visit there, and I'm desperately trying to rack my brains here. Who was the guy who went off in Shakedown as well? Who was the other guy in the Fiesta R5 from ERC?
Lucky Nook.
It was a pre-event test, yeah.
A pre-event test, sorry. So I get, thanks, Jack. we were obviously, you know, Kajan, fantastic. You know, let's not forget it was only his second time there. Obviously, lucky enough, we don't know where he would have been pace wise, but certainly those two ERC regulars, I think, would have had a lot more to say in the rally as well.
Yeah, Kajan was rapid, and if you were lucky to stand out on the stages over the weekend, you would have seen visibly how committed he was, and I think he was really, really pushing to try and. To try and keep with Craig, and like you say, it was only his second visit to the circuit of Ireland. So, you know, the home guys, you know the stage as well, will tell you how difficult it is. And to come from Poland and try Irish rallying for a second time, and to be that close to Craig Breen, I think anyone would be happy with. And like I say, if you're out on the stages, he was visibly committed, where some drivers were backing off a little bit. So, you know, he really was giving it his absolute all. And if you saw his face at the end of the Glen stage, he was bright red, and he said he's never driven a road like it in his life. You know, he really enjoyed the stages. So, yeah, it was nice to see him out. And I thought he did a really good job, actually.
I think what I was going to say, right, you've done some of these stages, I've done some of these stages, and the stages where you think you've done gone quite well, you've probably never had this, I certainly have, but stages where I get to the end of that, some of those stages that I've done when I've done Ulster, and you think, I've gone quite well there, and you look in your rearview mirror and there's somebody arriving 10 seconds later. And granted, when I did it last time, it was John Armstrong, he's an incredibly rapid young Irishman who we're going to see more of course, in the DMAC Junior in WRC this year. But it's the stages where you think you've gone well, and then you look at the times, aren't they, Ryan? And sometimes you probably haven't gone as well as what you thought you'd have.
I mean, particularly on a changeable weekend like last weekend, like I said, there was tyre choice at play as well. So and genuinely, the drivers didn't really know whether they were getting it right or wrong. So yeah, they could be up or down, not just on how they were driving, but also the tyres that were on it. I was actually speaking for quite a while to one of the engineers that was there for Pirelli at the end of one of the stages, and he said it was an unusual situation for them to be in. You know, it shouldn't be that three tyres could still produce roughly the same times, but that's what was happening in some cases. But then on other stages, people were going for wets and it turned out dry, and vice versa. But just to come back to what Jack said there, I think Kajtanovic is a class act. You know, he went there last year, built his speed up through the rally. He was fast towards the end of the rally. This year, he's fast all the way through, and we see that on every ERC rally he goes to. He's at the front. He's competing against the locals, and I think he's you know, he really is a top level driver.
Now, one thing I wanted to mention, of course, was the juniors. We've got Chris Ingram coming up a little bit later on, but the junior battle was an interesting story within itself, wasn't it, Jack?
Yeah, well, with the ERC juniors, we had Lucas Pianizek, hopefully, Ryan, I've got that one right, I'm sure you'll know. Lucas was a privateer at Oak Ladder, and he managed to jump the Works Adams for the win, which is great to see, really. It's nice to see a privateer, you know, beating the Works Opals, who bring such a massive setup to the event and really put a lot of money into it. But Chris had a good weekend. We can speak to him later on, so that's good. He struggled a bit on the Saturday, I think, with confidence, but improved muchly on Sunday, so that was nice to see as well.
Right, you've drove some of these little pocket rockets in the earlier guises, should we say, Super 1600s and things like that. And how hard is it to jump in a car like that and be so committed?
I think for Chris, he obviously he's driven a couple of different R2 cars now, obviously with the Twingo, then moving to the Peugeot and then onto the Opel now, and obviously they are going to be slightly different, and it takes maybe a while to build some confidence. Having said that, these are young guys, the hungry guys who want to compete, and you know, inherently they give it everything. And Jack just said that the Opel team was incredibly impressive. The truck they had in the service area, it just looked like a race team truck. It was immaculate, very, very professional setup, and their cars were going incredibly well. You know, they had one car that was comfortably in the lead until he got a puncture, and then it was a big battle all the way through. And I think Chris maybe took a little bit of time to find his feet with the car, but the Adams certainly seems to be arguably the car to beat now, so I think he'll go well through the year.
It's quite funny, isn't it? Because we seem to go through almost every year where there's a new R2 car to have. You know, last year everybody undoubtedly said, right, you've got to be in a 208. And everybody went 208. And now all of a sudden these little Opel Adams have come about and everybody's saying, right, you've got to be an Opel Adam now. And I just wonder what changes? Because there's not much you can change those cars, really, is there, right?
No, and I don't necessarily think the Adam's the only car to have. I mean, I think the Fiesta now with the 1 litre turbo engine is an incredible piece of kit as well. And it has, that car has so much torque. And I think certainly that car can take the fight to the Adams. I just guess, like anything, you know, slightly the newer car always has slightly better developments as we see in the R5 cars, but I definitely think the Fiesta can compete. We saw in Wales that a Twingo's still on the pace, and we also saw early on the circuit of Ireland that a 208 was up there leading. So Yeah, I don't think it's one-sided in any way. And you know, the good thing about R2 is it's still a driver's formula. You've got to get the very best out of the car. So that's great for young drivers.
So I guess, Jack, from a media point of view, it must have been very, very difficult to split things down for ERC, for BRC, obviously for Irish Tarmac and things like that. Did anybody actually bother, or did you just throw everything in the pot and just get on with it?
Yeah, it was quite a difficult one. It took a lot of working out at the end, and took me a long time to do the results for the reports at the end of the day. But yeah, it's one of those things when you get three championships together. It's kind of good and bad in the same sense that it's brilliant from a journalist's point of view, because you've got all these major championships coming. You've got so much talent. You know, we spoke about some of the drivers who came in, and then from the other point of view, it means a lot more work. So from a laziness point of view, it's not good. But yeah, what a fantastic weekend. Great drivers, great cars, and the stages are just incredible. So yeah, you can't complain at all.
I think there's an undoubted kind of feeling that did it work? Yeah, it did. I think that's what's coming out. I don't know, obviously you were there, Rye, as well. Did it work for you?
Yeah, I mean, the rally was a fantastic success. I think the one issue that the rally probably had, which I'm sure they'll be keen to address, was the service park. You know, the last 2 years have had this incredible service park at Titanic, which was a real feature of the rally. And unfortunately, this year that wasn't used. And the King's Hall, just to be honest, didn't really work well for teams of that stature. There just wasn't enough space in it. And it certainly wasn't a spectacle for spectators. So I think that's something that needs addressing, particularly if they're looking to go to WRC. But I'm sure Bobby and the team at the Circuit of Ireland are well aware of that, and there'd be reasons why they used that this year.
Now, one thing I did want to mention, and we're going to talk to Scott about this a bit later on, is I watched back some of the footage last night as well, because I do like to prepare for programmes, despite other people in this trio not really preparing too much. I'm not going to name names, Ryan.
Some of us are busy, you know, some of us are working.
I see the pictures on Facebook, right? Yeah, it looks really difficult. Anyway, this incident with the tyre with Craig, which wasn't really a puncture, the tyre still looked like to be inflated, but it was almost like it moved completely across the rim, but the tyre was still almost glued to the inner rim, so it just stretched the tyre across.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, that, wasn't it? I mean, the way it sort of, yeah, it was, if you haven't seen it, it's definitely something you need to go on and have a look on social media, have a look at the picture and the videos, where the tyre's sort of shifted across the rim, hasn't it? I mean, I don't know, Ryan, maybe you've seen something like that before, but it's not something that I've come across before, and it's a really strange incident, actually.
Yes, it probably was, actually. I mean, it kind of looked like it had come off the rim. You know, whether it was just literally knocked off the rim, I don't know. But yeah, it didn't look like it was a conventional puncture. It looked like it had just been knocked off the rim, as it were. And just to remind you, boys, I'm just sending you a picture of it now so you can actually have a look, because I was stood there.
Oh, there you go. Right. Yeah. I was stood there, actually, as it happens. Yeah. So good. So yeah, we'll put that out on Twitter as well. Probably. If I put it out now, everyone's going to wonder why I put it out on Twitter. Where if I put it out probably in a day or two, people who've downloaded the program will go, ah, that's why he's done that. So
I apologise to Julesy
a little bit later on.
I was just going to say, I apologise to Julesy now about that picture, because it does show his ball patch quite well. But anyway, I'm sure we'll get on with it.
Do you know what? You went very, very quiet then, and I'm glad you went very, very quiet. The reason why you went very, very quiet, because I heard you say ball patch, but I nearly misheard it as something else, and I'm going to move on very quickly from that. We always do the bits of news and pieces, obviously from MN this week. Now, Jack, we always normally preview it, but obviously the podcast is coming out a couple of days later this week, because we had so much to try and cram in and the various things going on. But yeah. I wanted to blast through some of the headlines. It's a bit of a Craig Breen loving as ever, but he's planning a hat trick already. He's already planning to go back next year. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of people were asking Craig the question, you know, are you coming back for your hat trick next year? And to be honest, if I was him, I'd be a bit annoyed by that. You know, I've just won a rally, I don't want to be thinking about next year. But yeah, a lot of people asking him the question, and he told us he'd love to. He said, "I'll do whatever it takes to come back here. I love the event." So he's someone who, you know, he's definitely switching his focus now to Poland, but I think he'll definitely be looking to come back next year if he can. You know, we've all seen how much he loves the rally and how much he loves rallying history in general. I think that's what really means a lot to him. You know, he joined Di Llewellyn and people like that in having two wins, so it was really, he was really excited at the end. Definitely someone looking to come back, I think.
Now, the guys, just looking, obviously, with regards to the BRC runners, which we didn't really speak too much about, and I suppose they were lost in a monumental event, but there's a couple of headlines from BRC as well, which I wanted to draw some attention to, which is Circuit of Ireland, which is the DMAC BRC Junior winner, which is Rob Duggan, who seemed to have a little bit of a mare leading up to the event. Just tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, he did the Circuit of Kerry, which was the weekend before the Circuit of Ireland. A part went in the engine, and when they started it up in the week, they realised that they were going to need a new engine. So they had one overnight freighted from Germany. It arrived on Wednesday evening, and the guys at Vauxhall Motorsport, Major Motorsport, had a bit of a struggle to get everything changed over and ready for the rally. But for Rob, thank God they did, because he was absolutely dominant over the weekend, and I think his teammate Matthias Adielsen was building his pace up quite nicely and was a lot quicker on the second day. But Rob was just supreme and didn't really have too much competition, really.
Again, this is, you know, obviously the Irish boys always go well in Ireland. It's not very often you beat one of the Irish boys in Ireland, I think it has to be said. But again, going back to some of the BRC stories, and again, I like stories within the story as well, and this one with regards to Rhys Yates and Tom Woodburn, bless him, who Tom's been on the programme in the past, and they look like they had a few dramas when they were trying to finish the events as well.
Absolutely. Well, they kind of went into, it was Rhys Yates' first proper asphalt rally, really, proper closed road stage rally anyway. And his plan always at the start of the event was just to get to the finish, build a pace up through the event and get used to the R5 on tarmac, really. So they did just that, and they were quite relaxed over the, if anyone knows Rhys, he's so laid back, he's horizontal anyway, but they were really laid back over the weekend and really enjoying a reliable car. And then they pulled up to the ceremonial start at the Queen's University, and an alternator belt had broken. So no one was allowed to work on the car but the crews. So they had a bit of a struggle and managed to, well, they pushed the car over the finish ramp, which, to applause of photographers, they were the last car over the ramp. Most of the spectators had left, but the photographers were there to applaud them over, and it was a really nice sight, actually, and they managed to start the car up and get it back to service. I spoke to him the day before yesterday, and it seems like the engine survived, so that's good news.
That's very, very good news. So I suppose from a point of view of runners and riders and finishers, of course, obviously Craig Breen won the ERC round. Now, the guy taking maximum points was Josh Moffat in the Fiesta R5. Again, this seems to be the weapon of choice for most people, but I think we were all looking forward to, we obviously had the lovely Bex Williams on the other week, who covers Irish tarmac as well. Obviously, normally the battle of the Moffats is normally a story within itself. Unfortunately, we lost the other brother,
Sam.
So we have Sam Moffat, who seemed to have a moment where he was going really, really well, and he just didn't quite make the corner. I've seen the footage. I don't know whether you've seen it or not, Jack, but he just didn't seem to just make the corner in some one way or the other. But Josh Moffat taking maximum points for BRC, which kind of levels the job up quite nicely, I suppose, leading into the Pirelli. There was no one kind of dominated. Even the lower point scorers, you know, Frederick Arling, of course, who everybody thought was not going to be on the pace, was surprisingly on the pace, but unfortunately didn't finish the rally.
No, Frederick Arling was one of the stories of the BRC, really, as was Martin McCormack. We'll talk about both of them now. I mean, Frederick was going really well, a couple of really good stage times. I think he was fourth overall on one of the stages on the first day, and then he hit the car on the Newton Arts TT stage, and I'm not sure exactly what they broke, but it was something in the front left corner, and Frederick managed to patch it up. And should probably mention it was probably his sort of expertise on the spanners that really kept the car in the rally, because they only had a 15-minute service the next morning to get the car back out again. So it was really a lot of hard work by the service crew at CA1 Sport, but definitely Frederick helped out the situation by doing a bit of the work on the spot. And then the other story was Martin McCormack, who was leading the BRC on the Saturday in an S2000 Skoda Fabia, so less power than the R5 cars, not the most modern machinery, but he really pulled it out on the Friday and had a bit of a gap. And then fuel pump went on the Saturday. And if anyone knows Marty, he never has any luck. He must be one of the most unlucky rally drivers. We talk about it quite often with people like Chris Meek, don't we, and referring to different people, but Marty is definitely in National Rally one of the most unluckiest people I've ever come across, and he came out of a spectacular lead really in that start, which was very disappointing as well.
No, I think it was, as you say, it was very, very unlucky. I've known Marty for a while, and to be fair, he's one person that I've got the utmost respect for. I think he's a very underrated driver, and he's also one person that I struggle to interview without not cracking during the interview.
I think
when he was doing the historics, of course, he was a very, very quick boy when he did the historics as well, and I did some of the TV coverage for the historics, and I think I took 15 takes once to do an interview with him because he just couldn't keep a straight face. So he's such a legend in many ways. Now, the other thing about Marty was I'm rooting for Marty, and the reason why I'm rooting for Marty because he is genuinely one of the good guys. And when we were doing BallyGB and we broke down on the recce, he dragged me, and I mean dragged me, out of the stage at full recce pace in order for him to still do the recce and me to still do the recce. And just didn't even hesitate. He stopped, get a rope on, right, carry on, we're both wreckying. And I'll be honest with you, probably the fastest I drove that stage when I was on the show right behind him. But still, there you go. Right, go on, you were about to say something.
No, I think it's an interesting one. I mean, Marty was obviously driving brilliantly, and it was such a shame for him. I saw Dave Moynihan, Marty's co-driver, just after they retired, and he genuinely looked gutted because it was a great drive. And it just goes to show, really, that the Super 2000 car is still competitive. You know, everybody's gone to R5 cars. There was, 34 R5 cars and only 4 Super 2000 cars. But a Super 2000 car was well up there, leading BRC. And that was on tarmac. Let's not forget that I think it was Timo Sunninen who won WRC2 on Rally GB last year in a Super 2000 Fabia. He beat Eric Camilli, beat Craig Breen in R5 cars. So there is life in a Super 2000 car yet, and maybe interesting that we don't see a few more of them out.
I think it's cost. Super 2 cars are a lot more expensive to maintain, aren't they? I think that's what it'll come down to.
But they're half the price to buy.
Yeah, let's not get into economics. Numbers are not my strong points. Numbers are not my strong point. But listen, guys, we could go on all day, but we've got Scott Martin on standby. So as much as I want to talk to you, so I'd much rather talk to Scott Martin, to be honest with you, because he's won the circuit by Ireland. You should just talk about it. So at this point, wow. Jack, have you got any other business? Because it's unfair. I've noticed a couple of people have mentioned to us, Ryan and I always do our any other business at the end of the programme, and obviously you always do the front half of the programme, and you never get a chance to do your any other business. Do you have any other business, Jack, you would like to get off your chest?
Well, I'm absolutely honoured to be asked that question. I hadn't prepared anything, so I wasn't expecting it, but I think my favourite part of the weekend was Frederick Arlin saying that On Empire is cool, but this is something else, referring to the Glen stage. I thought that was my highlight of the weekend, and I thought it was, you know, for someone to utter the words that On Empire might not be the best stage in the world was quite brave from Frederick Arlin, but yeah, I thought it was excellent.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, Jack, so you know you've got your homework now for next week. Not only do you have the supplies, the headlines, the stories and everything else, you need to have your any other business ready. But Jack, thanks so much, mate. Cracking front page for MN this week. You are really, really doing them proud, mate. Honestly, it's good to see rallying back the way it is, and you're doing some cracking coverage. And you'll be back, of course, for the next 9 weeks with us from here on in.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me, and I'll speak to you both next week. Thanks so much.
Cheers, Jack. See you soon, mate.
Cheers.
Bye.
And that was Jack from NN, and we're going to crack on now. We're going to go to a cheeky little break, and then we're going to come back with Scott Martin.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally, and it's a pleasure and an honour. We've had him on before, but we normally have the guy from the other side of the car, but we thought this time we'll have Scott Martin on. Scott Martin, rather. Welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Oh, thanks very much. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to have you on. Now, I watched the footage last night, Scott, of the Eurosport Extra programme. Can you answer me a question that me and my missus were slightly confused about?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll try.
Were you being interviewed by somebody that perhaps wasn't English?
No. No, that was probably just the speed that we were travelling at.
No. When you were in the truck, you were explaining things, but it genuinely felt like you were explaining to somebody perhaps who was on holiday from overseas. There was definitely an element to the tone. That's all we were saying. That's all we were saying. It's not a criticism. It was purely an observation.
Ah, right. Okay, I get you now. I'm with you now.
Yeah.
Could have been just under a bit of pressure, a bit of nerves as well.
No, listen, mate, it came across well. You explained it really succinctly and everything else. That's why we were asking more than anything. But still, there you go. Listen, mate, congratulations. I'm sure the hangover's subsided now and everything else and normal work has resumed. But it must have been an enjoyable weekend.
Yeah, no, it really was. It really was. It was... you know, for a long time it was looking like we wouldn't be able to do it. But then, you know, a lot of people were involved in making it happen. So to have a result like we did and you know, and it all went to plan. So there's a lot of people to thank, but hopefully the result we got, you know, they were more than happy with what we did. So it's brilliant. It's like a dream when it all works to plan like that, you know. It would be easy if it was like that all the time, but it's not, as you know. But no, thoroughly enjoyed it. A great event, and you know, all that hard work paid off, and it was fantastic.
How late in the day did all that come about? Obviously, there's been a lot made of the deal and everything else. Obviously, you guys have got such an intense program with Citroën Racing and PH Sport and the Abu Dhabi team, and obviously in WRC and testing and things like that. You know, this almost could have been seen as perhaps a distraction. So how did this, how late in the day really did the option come about to do the event?
Well, I mean, Craig was really keen to do it, and obviously there's Citroën are putting together an Evo kit for the R5 car. So, you know, we were in contact with Citroën to see if this was going to be available and whether we could run it. And with the timescale, it was actually going to be available only to us if they were going to have it in time. So, it, you know, in the early stages, it was looking like, you know, well, we could try the Evo kit for Citroën, if you like. You know, because they were going to be pushed to do it, so there was that option, and that's what we were thinking about. But as you know, the Evo kit was unavailable. The time frame was just too tight. So you know, it was then, well, you know, is it worth doing it? And you know, all the questions we asked, and but because we had gone so far down the line, or Craig and his manager had, you know, there's still that option to do it even without the Evo kit. When we put everything on the table, and as I said, a few people from back home at Craig's, they all worked together and made it possible. So, but it was right up until the 10 minutes before the entries closed. That's how close it got. Because, like I said, there's a lot of ideas and things getting thrown about, you know, in the run up to it. Like I mentioned with the Evo kit and things like that. But when it came down to it, the car was there. There was X amount of money to be found, and 10 minutes before the entries closed, it all came together. So it was literally, when entries closed, a couple of weeks before the event, it was given the go ahead. But the night before that, Craig said, "No, it's not looking like we'll go." So that's how late it was.
Was there a sense of satisfaction winning it without the Evo kit as well?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it bodes well for the car. I don't know the all the details with the Evo kit. Certainly never will have tested some of the parts when we were doing development work with Peugeot last year, but not all together. You know, we won't have tried the complete package. So it would have been good to try in Ireland. But, yeah, like you said, the car worked really well all weekend. Craig and the engineer had the setup absolutely bang on. So yeah, in one sense, if the Evo kit arrives for the Citroen in the next few weeks, I'm sure it's going to make the car even better. So it does bode well for the car, and it needs it really. I think you could see last year with the Skoda and the Fiesta, and particularly the Fiesta, the upgrade that they had, you know, it really did, you know, jump it forward and was right up there with the Skoda. Whereas for quite a bit of the year last year, the Skoda was a little bit ahead, particularly on gravel, it had the edge. But the Fiesta's right up there now, and obviously a strong package with the likes of Elvin Evans in it. And so we knew we were going to be up against it in Ireland, you know, with the car that wasn't running the new Evo kit. So that probably just made us have to drive, or Craig drive, even harder.
Fantastic. Well, one man who was over there and was at some of your stage ends, of course, was Ryan Champion. Ryan, say hello to Scott.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Ryan. How are you?
Yeah, good. No, fantastic to see you get the win. And as ever, when Craig seems to win something, it seemed quite emotional at the end. But you know, it was great to see your result. But I was just going to take you back to the start of the rally. I mean, obviously, Elvin's pace early on was pretty electric. Was that a worry at that point, or were you just sort of bedding yourselves in? Did you always know there was a bit more speed to come?
No, I mean, we knew he was going to be fast. And I mean, one of the great things about the European Championship or any championship in rallying is if you have a choice of tyre manufacturer. And that was clear, you know, even on qualifying, you know, Elvin's time on qualifying, it was like, yeah, great time, brilliant, but it has to be down to tyres. There's no way you can be more than a second decay in like 4 kilometres without it being something, you know, completely different. So we knew then, but I mean, still, you know, everybody's trying to suss out which tyre package everybody has and what's going to be work and what's going to work the best. So I think we both knew that there might be stages that, you know, will be a little bit off the pace, but then we hoped that, you know, there'd be the ones that we were, you know, right on it and hopefully winning stages. So I think, you know, everyone saw he was really quick from the start, but I think you had to let that whole loop, you know, take part to really see, you know, who had the right tyres for what stages and who was the quickest over the loop. Because, you know, in the 60K loop, there was two stages. One was 20, one was 11, and then you had the 31K stage. So our tyre choice was really looking at the long stage at the end of the loop. So, but, you know, we heard a few split times in the long stage before Elvin retired, so I think we were 3 or 4 faster. But we're actually 3 or 4 faster than Cato and Alistair Fisher, so everyone was in the similar ballpark at the midpoint, and then it was at the end that I think tyres really worked well for us. So I don't know what Elvin would have done, difficult to say, but it would have been a great fight all weekend if it's just unfortunate Elvin retired on that so early on in the rally.
Well, I actually heard you were up on about halfway through the Glens, and the man I heard it from is the managing director of DMAC. So I reckon you probably were up.
Yeah, it seems like everyone was watching there, because there were a few people that said the same. So, but it would have been interesting to see what would have happened towards the end. And, you know, I know the other crews, they lost a lot of time in the second half. So whether Elvin would be the same, you know, you don't know, but. But no, it was a fantastic rally for that reason, you know, the tyre choice. And I think maybe some people realise, and a lot of people I think don't, they forget that element of tyre, you know, because I think when you're looking at a lot of the championships at the top flight now, they're all controlled. So people don't even think about that aspect. There's not really, even just with the controlled tyre, there's not a big choice of compound or construction or anything like that. So people kind of forget that element, but it really does make it interesting, and you know, and the stage times are quite often up and down, particularly when the weather was like it was in Ireland.
Yeah, and probably even further than that, the individual stages really varied, didn't they? I mean, I was at the end of Hamilton's Folly on the Saturday morning, and there was quite a lot of Pirelli runners, and as we've already talked about a little bit earlier in the programme, I mean, I saw probably 4 or 5 different Pirelli choices alone at the end of that stage. So not only was the loop changing, but each individual stage was changing, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had hailstones at the end of one stage, so it was crazy, and but it made it all more exciting. And but like you say, Pirelli seemed to have like a massive amount of options and choices. So you know, they're obviously putting a lot of effort in. Whereas Michelin have we had three options over the weekend. But, you know, when you have three or four stages in the changeable weather, I think maybe having too many options is a bad thing. But it made it interesting. And like you said, there were so many choices and different tire changes and people taking two spares with different compounds. It makes it really exciting.
Now, speaking of tyres, obviously you got the puncture halfway through Saturday. That put you under a bit of pressure. Do you remember actually getting the puncture? What led up to it?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know it hit anything at all. I felt it towards the end, and Craig actually said that he thinks we got a puncture. So he obviously knew we'd hit it. And then, you know, a few corners after, could feel it in the car. But no, for me, I didn't hear or feel anything. But like you said on the TV, I think a loose rock had been pulled out from the side of the road and we've clipped it. Fortunately, it was towards the end and it was at the rear, so we didn't lose so much.
And that meant going into the last loop then, obviously it was crucial. You just had a very small lead over Kajtanovic going into the last loop. And again, it probably came down to quite a brave tyre choice. I think you went on maybe a slightly harder tyre and it started pouring down, didn't it, as you were leaving service. So that was, you probably weren't even sure what was going to happen then, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we left Belfast on a harder tyre than what we'd run. And it was hailstones and like torrential rain. And we were like, oh. But you know, it's like you have friends everywhere. So we had friends on the stage and we're like, what's the weather like? And it's like sunshine. So, and you have to kind of trust your weather forecasts. And because we've been monitoring the weather all day, we knew, and it had rained on the stages while we were in service. So the rain was obviously coming up, but the sunshine was out again. So we were just praying that there was no more showers and the sun was going to stay out for the remainder of the loop, because yeah, it was quite a brave choice, but we'd made a conservative choice in the morning and that, you know, we lost a little bit of time in the morning. So it was difficult. It kept it really intense and it kept the pressure on all weekend. You know, you couldn't take your eyes off it. But the first two of the loop, if I remember right, the first two of the loop were wet and we did have the hailstones at the end of Hamilton's Folly, but then, the last one was dry, and we knew then that, you know, our tyre choice was good and we were in a comfortable position then. We just had to have a clean run.
Which you did, and, you know, it took a fantastic victory. And like I said, it was quite emotional at the end of the last stage, the stop line. I don't know if I've ever seen so many people at a stop line of a British rally. It was like a WRC event.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, obviously it helps with Craig coming from Ireland and it means a lot to him. So obviously emotions are running high, but I mean the hype around that event, even from the start of the year and leading all the way up to it, was crazy. I don't really think I've seen anything quite like it. But the event delivered. You know, it was a massive spectacle, and you know, it's a beautiful part of the world. But it was fun. You know, that makes it special for me as well. You know, to win such an event like that, it has massive history. It means a lot to Craig, and then there's a lot of home support, and you know, you were there, and friends like Seb, and you know, all guys like that. You know, it's amazing to be there and celebrate with, you know, all the friendly faces.
So now the celebrations are over, Scott. What lies ahead? I've seen some pictures from Craig on Facebook. He's in the Algarve. Where are you?
I'm currently in the family business in front of a desk. So, no Algarve sunshine for me. I think his parents are out there as well, so they're having a bit of a break. He also does some tuition with a guy out there as well. So he's working, but also finding some time to relax a little bit, so well deserved. And we're getting called up to do a Citroen test this month as well, which is going to be exciting.
This is going to be the new car. There's been some images already that have been released over the last 48 hours of the new World Rally car, I guess.
Yeah, I just saw some on Facebook earlier there, so it was it's looking really impressive. So the information has been very very scarce and they're not really saying too much. We know which airport we're flying to and we've got a hire car voucher. So we'll just turn up and turn up and see what there is, but obviously they want to keep it all confidential at this stage. So we're happy with that. It's really exciting to be involved. I think you know, our performance in Sweden is fast forwarders in many ways. So, and this is one. It's a big part for Citroën Racing, is the development of next year's car. So to be involved in it so early on, I think is all credit to Craig, and hopefully we can keep the good vibes going.
Fantastic. Listen, again, lots and lots of congratulations. It was a stunning event to watch, and I think as we've been talking about earlier on in the program, it was a fantastic story kind of told. I think the coverage has been, I don't know if you remember anything is well covered, Scott. That's the, well, just before you go, sorry, but I can't remember an event in my lifetime. I'm soon to be 42. He cringes as he says it, but I don't remember a single event having so much coverage.
No, but like you said, I'm probably unaware about it, but I was speaking to people as we were going on the road sections, and they were commenting all the time, saying, like, you know, there was live TV, there was this, there was that, and I'm like, wow. I mean, that was on day one. I remember Colin Clark going mental, saying how good it was, and obviously the weather was okay in stages, it was quite good in stages, so that meant they could get great footage as well, so... No, it's fantastic to hear, and all credit to the organisers and Bobby Willis and the Circuit of Ireland, because they've done a fantastic job. They really have. So, I mean, imagine if there was a WRC event there. I mean, I just don't know what would happen. But
it'd just explode.
An impressive event. Yeah, I think it would. Yeah. You know, but I mean, all the hype is there for the right reasons. They had a great entry. I mean, it obviously helps when you've got three championships, but you know, there's no doubt that the rallying is still alive in Ireland, and I hope they can continue to grow and grow, because you know, it was only, was it last year? No.
A couple of years ago, with the circuit was under threat.
This is the third year, and she's gone from strength to strength, so long may it continue, because it certainly delivers, and everybody loves it, and rightly so.
Fantastic. Listen, we'll let you get back to work. Feel guilty keeping you from the job, so we'll let you get back to work.
my dad hasn't looked in yet, so I'm doing all right.
Good man. Listen, we'll catch up soon, and thanks again.
No worries. Thanks.
Cheers,
a lot.
Scott.
See you later.
Take care. All the best.
Bye.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was Scott Martin. Now, all being well, we're going to cross over, and we're going to be talking to Paul Coleman from Codemasters. So sit back, relax, listen to our sponsors. Again, without these guys, we wouldn't be here, and you wouldn't be able to download us. So again, big up to Team Coordinate. If you haven't checked them out yet, please check out their Facebook page, and also they've just signed up to Twitter as well recently. So follow them on Twitter. We did give them a bit of a retweet the other week, and if you could do that, that'd be great. But we'll be back very, very shortly with Paul Coleman from Codemasters.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back. I'm welcoming back a guest, a former guest that we had on, and we probably badgered into producing the Dirt Game on console, and he didn't let us down. And Paul Coleman, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi, yeah, it's good to be back on again.
I'll be honest with you, you do owe me 48 hours of my life that I lost over the weekend as well. Because not only, while I wasn't following Circuit of Ireland, I completely and utterly fell in love with your game.
And, oh, that's awesome to hear. I mean, 48 hours is a small number compared to some of our bigger fans. So, yeah, you've got a long road ahead of you yet.
And they got it on Friday, Paul. Give me a chance. I had to go out. This is a true story before we go any further. I took on board the advice you gave us a few months back when you said you've got to have the steering wheel. You've got to have, and it was the, I know other steering wheels are available, but you recommended the Logitech steering wheel. And I managed to track down a Logitech steering wheel from a man who bought one and he'd had it for a week and decided to sell it. And the reason why he was selling it, he said, I'm much better with the controller. And I went, right, okay, I'm going to come round and pick it up. He lived around the corner, and I shot around to pick him up, and he went, what are you buying the steering wheel for? I said, well, funny enough, I'm only buying it for one game in particular. I'm buying it for Dirt, because it was highly recommended that we have this particular type of steering wheel to play this game. And he went, that's the only reason why I bought the steering wheel. And you know what? Slowly but surely it dawned upon me that I could have been talking myself out of a really good deal for a steering wheel. I kind of had to hold myself back and go, yeah, but if you're better on the controller, my friend, I'm sure it works much better for you. And yeah, I much preferred it on the controller. And I quickly paid him, put it in the boot of my car, and drove off as quickly as possible. So, and he wasn't even, the reason why I'm telling you this story, by the way, he wasn't a rally fan, but he'd seen the game, he'd seen all the previews and stuff like that, and he said it just seemed like a no-brainer to buy it, which I think is such good news, because he genuinely had no interest in rallying.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we're all fans of Rally, right? And I think the approach we took with Dirt Rally was to make something that really showed the sport in the truest light possible, so that anyone who was interested by the fact that it's a high-quality game, when they pick it up, they start to play Rally as Rally should be, and they start to get that feeling that we all know from driving down those stages. Because I think what we'd been doing previously was not really a representation of the sport in itself. So people were buying what was essentially a rally game and not getting what rally really was. And, you know, I think it's part of my purpose as a game developer is to better inform people about the sport as authentically as possible. And I'm really glad that it is transcending just rally fans. I think if we were making this game and it was only being sold to rally fans, you'd be in a situation where the business model wouldn't work and you know, we wouldn't be able to make another one. But the fact that it has transcended just rally fans and it's reaching out to all racing fans, but it's actually going further than that. I think there's players who wouldn't normally pick up a racing game but just love a good challenge, and they love the sense of being able to pick something up and master it over a period of time, and it's that type of player that we're starting to tap into. And the fact that it's been critically acclaimed and our players are giving it rave reviews as well means that, you know, that word of mouth is really spreading, so yeah, I'm delighted with how it's gone.
I think the thing I'll say, I completely and utterly fell in love with the F2 cars on the rally, has to be said, completely and utterly. I'm just blown away. If the game would have only had those cars on it and Sweet Lamb, then I probably would have been happy with that. I would have quite happily paid my money just for those three elements. But of course, it's got so much more to it. It's got obviously the depth of it now. Not only has it got the rally elements, of course, you flirted with Rallycross in it.
Yeah, well, you know, we always, when we finished using the Colin McRae name directly and calling the game just Colin McRae Rally, and we moved to the Dirt franchise name, we did branch out further, and at the time that was exactly what Colin was doing as well. He was looking towards the X Games, he was starting to do Dakar, and even a bit of Le Mans, but although we didn't represent that. And, you know, that diversity really helped us take the Colin McRae franchise, turn it into Dirt, and bring it to what is now the previous generation, the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. And so the way that we represented Rallycross in those early games was quite close. We had Croft, I think, and Knock Hill, and then SA in France. And then we started to fictionalize the sport and almost make it like a hyper-real version of this kind of crossover between what X Games would have done if they could have afforded to set up the tracks and, I guess, Red Bull or Monster Energy. But with Dirt Rally, because we took such an authentic approach to the rally side of things, it was really important for us to get the authentic side of Rallycross represented. And, you know, we had the choice of whether we go with Global Rallycross or with the FIA World Rallycross Championship. And it was very clear to us that the FIA World Rallycross Championship were doing things much more legitimately. The tracks that they were using were real Rallycross tracks, which had a lot of history, even though the sport was in, I guess you could call it a clubman sport, there was a huge following around certainly Northern Europe. And so, yeah, it made absolute sense to do the Rallycross side of things, but to do it as properly as we possibly could.
Ryan, I know you've had a little foray into Rallycross. It's something which I'm going to be having a little bit of a flirt with a bit later this year, which I'll talk more about in later programmes. But you've not played it yet. But, of course, I've actually technically drove your car on it. That's the nearest I'll ever get to doing that, of course.
I hope you looked after it. I hope you didn't crash it. I bet you did, didn't you? I bet you crashed it on the first stage.
I'll be honest with you, it was about 14 pieces in Sweet Lamb by the time I finished. But your car, of course, certainly the noise of your car was featured in the game.
Yes, it was. Yep. So it was recorded. My actual car was recorded for the game to get the authentic noise for the 555 Subaru. Which that's the lovely thing about having the car is it is synonymous with Colin McRae. Everybody remembers it, and it's a lovely privilege to have the car and actually to take it to events. But the sound of it is a real key element which Paul and his team were keen to get. But I mean, Paul, just going back right to the start, you talked about the business model for the game. The business model for the game didn't exist. You had to push your bosses hard to even get this off the ground, didn't you?
There was a bit of that. Look, I think in the end, the biggest issue with it was, how do we actually sell this game? I think when they saw it, they realized that there was something there. There was a diamond in the rough, but the challenge was going to be, how do we take this to market? And that was where the stumbling block was. And I think the early access process on PC really helped us, because it was probably the lowest risk way of doing it, but it meant that not only were we getting to improve the game from a development point of view, but we were also getting a huge amount of word of mouth, spreading the word about what we've done and how we've done it. So, yes, I think it's fair to say that certainly from our previous executive team, there was a huge amount of doubt in terms of what we were presenting them with. But I think that the new execs that came in believed in what we had. It was just a case of the question was, how do we actually get this in front of people, and how do we get people excited about it?
Now, already there's been an incredible amount of hype about the game through early release, through people that have experienced it already. I guess you're very proud of what you've achieved. What are your sort of personal highlights with what you've got in the game? What are the things you're especially proud of?
The key things for me are how the cars feel, and the fact that we've managed to capture the character of every single vehicle in the game. I think, a lot of the time in video games, you get a situation where a lot of the cars feel very similar, and you can even jump from rear-wheel drive to front-wheel drive, and the cars will feel quite close to one another. We put so much effort and time into the simulation side of things, and that was every single aspect. But I think one of the things that's probably given us the most character is actually the differentials, and how each car's differential is modeled differently, so that you really get that feeling of the car and how it searches for grip on the road. Certainly the handling, I think that's the solid foundation that we've built the whole prototype on, and what this game is getting praised for the most. Personally, the co-driver, I think the fact that we recce'd the stages, because the stages were so much more technical and more detailed, we had to do more detailed co-driver calls. We did them as route notes to make sure that any car that you drive down those stages will be able to kind of find your way through the stage. I think pace notes would have been okay for some cars, but quite off-putting for others. So I think route notes were definitely the way forward. And the fact that we actually recorded them live, so I'd sit there with my crash helmet on and actually do the notes live while somebody drove the stage, I think it got that kind of intensity and, I don't want to say emotion, but certainly intensity and kind of the physical aspect of being thrown around in a seat. That translating into the voice, I think that's definitely more immersive than anything we've done before. And although the calls that Nicky did on Colin McRae Rally were definitely great calls, don't get me wrong, the tracks were so much simpler that they didn't have the kind of level of detail that we required for Dirt Rally. And so, I'm not going to claim that I'm one of the world's best co-drivers by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think, in gaming terms, we've written the best notes and the most accurate notes that anyone ever has for a video game.
So you've put all this energy into this game. You've had the early release. You've had the PC version, now Xbox and PS4. So it's there. It's done. It's out there. What next?
That's a very good question. I think the cool thing is that it's shown that this is a viable thing to do, right? I think that was that was one of my main concerns, was when we took this to console, was it going to have the same kind of level of interest that we had on PC? And I'm delighted to say that certainly from what I've seen so far, the numbers stacking up and it's looking great. So that gives us, as a business and as developers, you know, far greater confidence, a renewed confidence in making this type of game. So now it's a case of what do we do with it? Do we keep adding content into Dirt Rally, which I think would be an easy option, but would only be a short-term thing and may not actually get the numbers that we would need to sustain it? Or do we take things to the next level and maybe release a sequel? Or do we do something with this that is, you know, properly special, like brings something really unique to the table, but at the same time maintains that solid foundation and that heart that we created for Dirt Rally? So I think whatever we do will have Dirt Rally underpinning it in terms of what it feels like, what it plays like. Obviously, we'll want to be iterating and improving on that feeling, and I already have seen some prototype handling for work that we've been doing in the studio that already makes Dirt Rally seem like old school. So, you know, that's hugely exciting. But I think we can't just iterate on the cars and expect people to run out and throw their money at us again. We need to do something a bit more innovative and a bit more exciting, and something that speaks to Rally and what makes Rally so special. And, you know, you always hear that saying of, okay, race drivers get to see the same corner 100 times, whereas rally drivers see 100 corners once, right? Well, right now in Dirt Rally, we have a limited number of corners, and you get, although our tracks are very difficult to master, they are still the same tracks, whatever way you look at it. So finding a way of perhaps innovating and giving players more variety in what they're driving on, I think is a priority for us. So, you know, there's plenty of ideas on the table that are floating around. I think it would be great to also present the core of the game with much more kind of production values around them. It's something we used to do with our games really, really well, and Dirt Rally was definitely a stripped-down version of that. So, you know, making a much more coherent reason to be playing your way through your career, polishing all those aspects up to make the game feel like it's worth the money that you've paid for it beyond just what that experience on track is, I think are elements that we want to be improving on. But the great news is that, you know, the success of this has given us confidence going forwards. And, you know, I don't think it's a huge stretch to say that we will be doing another one.
Right. Now, I need to ask you a couple of things, Paul, because as I say, I've lost huge chunks of my life already, and it's going to happen again this evening as well, because I've got my little evening planned out. Now, one obvious question, just picking up from what you were saying there, how much more capacity does kind of Xbox and PS4 have than what you've already tapped into with this game?
So I think there's a lot there. I think one of the things we want to do is improve our lighting technology. I think we're still lighting our tracks in quite an old school way. If we can improve that, then instead of having, you know, three times a day per location, we can, I'm not going to say we can give you a 24-hour clock, but you can certainly have, you know, low sun in the morning that is offering you a very different challenge because your visibility is getting properly affected by it. Again, the shadows, I think our shadows can be quite dark at times in the forest, and your eye would adjust more to that stuff in real life. So we want to be able to play with that kind of eye adjustment side of things, so that when you do go into the deep forest, you do get that moment of darkness, but then your eyes adjust out. And the same applies for if your headlights go on a night stage. You know, you initially you're plunged into total darkness, but then your eyes start to adjust and you'll start to be able to see a bit of road, even though you're down on and relying entirely on moonlight. But, you know, that adjustment doesn't really occur at the minute, whereas it should do, as it would in real life. So there's areas like that we can definitely improve on, and I think the current breed of consoles are definitely capable of that. There's some exciting stuff on the horizon in terms of hardware. Obviously, virtual reality is getting talked about a lot now, so we're looking to be supporting virtual reality as much as possible, because racing games are great for it, because you're sat in the single position in the car, and the world moves around you. And obviously with a rally game, you're sliding the car around, so being able to look in the direction that you're sliding is a huge advantage, and something that first-person shooters or role-play games don't really like offer you that kind of positioning within a vehicle. So, you know, the hardware should improve to help with VR, and then our support of VR will mean that going forwards we should have more performance to play with and more ways of allowing players to experience our game. So exciting times ahead, definitely.
Fantastic. Now, one idea I did have, not that I'm any expert, but you were talking about obviously the next evolution and stuff like that, is definitely tyres. I think you could tap into something with tyres. Funny enough, we've just been talking about it on the circuit of Ireland now, how the tyre wars has come back to rally, and perhaps that's something that could come part of the game as well.
Yeah, it's something that we actually discussed with Dirt Rally, but because our tracks didn't evolve, and because our stages were predominantly a particular type of gravel, although they were like for example, Wales had three or four different types of gravel on it, but they were all variants on a wet gravel theme. You would probably go into that stage choosing a softer compound gravel tyre, and that would really be your only feasible choice, whether it rained or not, because cuts were starting to get abolished. You know, the WRC was certainly getting tighter with its tyre allowances and its tyre choices. But as with all of these things, when we do them, we want to do them properly. And I think to get tyre choice in, you need to actually not just rely on the conditions, but also tyre wear. And to get tyre wear in properly, that is a whole different ball game in terms of...
Yeah, good. Very good point. I should know better. Sorry, I'll take that back. I'll take that one back, Paul. Now, I apologise because I did call you some names as well over the weekend. Because, of course, you are the voice, you are the co-driver in it. And there was one or two, as far as I'm concerned, there was one particular corner where I'm actually screaming at you, Paul, there should have been a caution on that.
Okay.
There should have been a caution on that. There should have been a care on it, at least. It was a two left and it tightens to a one. And there should have been a care on it, because I fell off that corner 18 times.
Well, I can only say that you should have learnt it by then.
Yeah. Yeah. They speak of the driver coach. I even had to tweet Neil Cole as well over the weekend. Neil's a mate of mine. Of course, he is the voice of the paddock area in World Rallycross. And you've got him as the spotter on RX. And I got sick and tired of hearing his voice telling me not to cut corners. So I ended up tweeting him saying, Neil, will you stop telling me to cut corners? And he just tweeted me back saying, perhaps you should stop cutting corners, which was a very valid point. But no, I am completely and utterly in love with this game. I'm not just saying it because you're on, but it's like everything I have ever wanted, and the difference in the cars I am staggered by. I'm hopeless in a rear wheel drive car. If anybody can drive the rear wheel drive cars quickly and not crash, I doff my cap to them, by the way. I have got no idea how you drive an
good.
Escort quickly.
So when we go head
thing.
To head, when we finally arrange this, we're going to do it in an Escort, are we? That sounds perfect.
No. We're doing it in the F2. I tell you what, the F2 Ibiza, right, is the car on gravel, and on tarmac, it's got to be the 306.
Yeah. That's exactly how we made them. Yeah. So yeah, you got that absolutely spot on.
Yeah, and six gear flat out in Finland in an F2 car. Oh, I've got goosebumps just thinking about it. I've got goosebumps. But we do need to sort out this challenge, of course. Now, one thing we do got to do before you go, Paul, is you very, very kindly sent us some copies of the game. Both for Xbox and PS4, signed by all the team behind it, and we are going to have them to give away to our lovely listeners. Now, do we set a question as such, or this is entirely up to you. How would you like us to give these games away?
I think a question's a good thing, but you're going to put me on the spot and ask me to come up with a question now, aren't you?
I think we could workshop it between the three of us. I think that's fair. That's fair. That's what happens. It's a podcast. We can do this, Paul. We can do this. So, do we make it... we can't make it specifically about something in the game. That would be unfair because, of course, they are trying to win the game.
Yep.
So perhaps, do we dip into the past of the game, the history of the franchise? Could that be a way forward?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I'm wondering what the best way of doing that would be. There is a really tricky question which caught me out, actually.
Okay.
And it's to do with the co-driver calls, actually. But the question I would ask is, what co-driver call system was used in the original Colin McRae Rally?
Now I like that. How about you, Roy?
Yeah, I would have a guess at that. Obviously, I'm not going to, but I think I would have a guess at that, because if I remember, there was a demo version that had like three stages, and I played that to death, those three stages, that 97 Subaru in New Zealand, I seem to remember.
Yeah, that's it. I remember it. So the question, Paul, take it away.
Okay, so which co-driver call system was used in the original Colin McRae rally?
So, which co-driver call system used in the original Colin McRae rally? So, if you can get in contact with us via Twitter, send us a DM, or get in contact via the Facebook page, you know where we live, and you could be in the chance of winning not only the game, but it's also a really nice package as well, isn't it, Paul? Because you get that really, really nice DVD of Colin McRae, of course.
Yeah, so it is a Blu-ray, but obviously it's at DVD quality because of when it was filmed, but we were really pleased that we were able to work with Duke Video, and I love that documentary because it was filmed in the summer before Colin passed, so it was him talking about his life and his achievements and his career, and there is a bit of posthumous stuff at the end, but it's not a retrospective, if you know what I mean. It's much more him talking about what made him who he is, and I think that was why we chose to go with that rather than the one that the BBC did, which I should remember the name of, but I can't.
Racing Legend.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, you are in a chance with winning not only game, obviously also winning that DVD as well, obviously signed by the team at Codemasters, and we thank you very, very much for that, Paul. But we will now leave you to crack on with your busy day. We thank you so much for joining us, but we do need to try and get our diaries together, both Ryan and I and your good self, and we need to come to Codemasters, and I'm going to bring my race suit, my race boots, my helmet. I'm taking this seriously. So we need to talk, and we need to come and have the absolute rally team versus the Codemasters boys.
All right, we're doing it that way.
I didn't know that. You are ramping it up now. Yeah.
I don't care, as long as it's in an F2 car, that's all I'm going to say. Anyway, Paul, thanks so much, mate. Really do really appreciate the support. Thank you for bringing the game out that we pestered you to bring out some near on a year ago now. And again, thank you for the prizes for our lovely listeners as well.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Bye.
All the best. And that was Paul Coleman of Codemasters. As I say, I can't even convey how good this game is. And if you haven't got it yet, enter the competition, go and do a bit of research. And if you've got Xbox or PS4, we'll get you one of those in the post. Anyway, before we go any further, we're going to have a cheeky little break. Then we're going to come back with a short chat that I did with Chris Ingram following Circuits of Ireland. And then after that, we'll have Any Other Business.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to Absolute Rally. A friend of the show, not had him on for a while, Chris Ingram. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really good. I'm really good. I've come down now from the excitement of just merely watching the Circuit of Ireland, let alone competing in the Circuit of Ireland. How about you?
Yeah, really good. It was an awesome rally.
It's I'll be honest, it was difficult to follow because there was so much going on. What was it like to be in it? Did you realise what was going on elsewhere? Were you just focused on your own battle in the juniors? Because it was such a vast event, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a lot of battles, but to be honest, I was just concentrating on the juniors.
And
there wasn't much time to look at much else, really.
Obviously, first time out, new car, new team, everything else, and popping your Opel Cherry, so to speak. How was it for you?
Yeah, we did well. Yeah, we finished second in junior ERC, so there was a lot to take on board, new car, new co-driver, but I'm really... really pleased with that result.
They seem to have come almost from nowhere, these little Adams. Obviously, you battled against them quite toughly driving for Peugeot last year, and obviously you've got this opportunity now, and they just seem to be everywhere, and they seem to be the weapon of choice, so to speak, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, on the circuit there was 7 or 8 of them, I think, which is mad, really, considering there was none last year.
I don't even think there was that many probably existed last year, and that's the other fascinating thing, isn't it? Just, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what they are and where they've come from and how they've evolved so quickly?
Well, it's the first time Opel have properly got back involved in rallying for God knows how many years. And they started with the Adam Cup in Germany, which is basically an R1 car but with a sequential box. And then they launched the junior team in the ERC and won the championship last year against me, really. I was their main rival. And yeah, and they're just they're putting a lot of resources into it, and they love it, really. So it's all going really well and going from strength to strength.
There was lots of things that we all like to reminisce. We all love rally. I know you love your rally history as well, but there was also another nice little touch, I think, on your car as well, which took us back to the glory days of Vauxhall and Opel and everything else, of course, which was a little bit of Brandon. Tell us how well that came about.
Yeah, Andrew Seatfire have actually become a sponsor of mine, and it's the first time they've been involved in rallying for 25 years, so it's a privilege, really. It all came about when I met Russell Brooks and drove his old Manta 400 at Race Retro. And we made a video, he sent it on to the Andrews guys, and they loved it and thought it'd be good to get back into the sport, so pretty
well,
incredible.
Again, it's iconic branding again, isn't it? We all love to kind of harp on about these things, but again, it's bringing somebody back to rallying that was involved with it before and everything else. But I think the marriage of Opel as well, I think it's bringing it back to that brand as well. I just think so many people will have memories of that, won't they?
Yeah, especially on the circuit of Ireland, because Russell won it 3 times, so it's a really nice story, and it's nice to be part of it.
Fantastic. Now, I've known you for a long time, Chris. I've seen your career progress and everything else, and you're now back in this world almost of just turning up and driving a rally car for a team, and there's been a kind of natural progression to that. Over the last few years, obviously you ran the Twingo yourself, you had the deal with Peugeot support and everything else, but now you're kind of in the realms of turning up and doing tests and just driving for a team. How does that feel? It seems like a really obvious question, but can you divorce yourself of all the things that you used to be able to do or wanted to get involved with now and just focus on driving?
That's a really good question, because it was nice to have my own rally car a few years ago. But obviously, when everything's done for you and you can just turn up and drive, and you're working with the best guys in the business, like my engineer was McRae's engineer in Skoda WRC team. It was Ricciardo's engineer in Formula One, so can't complain about that. But I think my dad struggles, to be honest, because he's not involved with the team at all. So he's had to take a step back, and I think it's been harder for him than me.
Wow. Now, I suppose the other question, and I'm sure I've asked you this question before, and it's never really bothered you before, so I will ask it again, because the job's changed again since the last time we spoke. Does all this bring an added pressure? Because if you put yourself out there, then you're there to be shot down, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. There's always some people that you can't make happy. There's always like the odd troll on Twitter and stuff, but I'm just living the dream and doing my best to try and achieve my goals, so just keep doing what I'm doing.
Absolutely. No, but as I say, it wasn't, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it, where you know, when people are successful and they do crack on, then as you say, there's always people who'll knock everybody. The people who'll knock me in my glorious career. Anyway, moving on. What I mean is by that, you know, obviously you've had this kind of fast track, but you know, there's been a lot of time and a lot of cars, and there's been a lot of blood, sweat and tears to get to this point. But when you get to this point, it's still only the beginning, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'll just, you know, I want to win the junior ERC this year and see where that takes me. But I think when you achieve things and you win rallies or win championships, then you know you've achieved it and you can be happy with that. So I just, like, obviously I want to go as far as I can, but just take it year by year and enjoy it as much as possible.
I think you've got to do it with a smile, mate. Honestly, I think it makes so much of a difference when you do this stuff with a smile. I think it comes through as well. I think it really does come through. So we're talking year on year. This deal with Opel Motorsport, is it just for 2016, or have you got an option at the end of it? How does it work?
There is an option, yeah, but it depends on a car, a few potential car in the future. Okay. So we'll see how it goes. I'd even love to do another year in an R2, to be honest, if nothing else came about in a four-wheel drive, because it's just awesome to be part of a proper factory team.
Yeah, sometimes it's better to be perhaps in a car like that, in a proper team, than perhaps maybe in what would be deemed to be a bigger car, you know, maybe an R5 or even an R4 car, whatever it may be, and not have that resource and that support and that kind of testing as well, which seat time's just, you know, people forget just so much how important seat time is, don't they?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. There's no chance I'd be able to ever drive an R5 car unless it was with, you know, a manufacturer team, because I've just not got the backing unless a big sponsor came along. So I'm definitely doing the right thing at the moment, I think, to try and stay in the junior work teams, as it were.
And the ERC, of course, mileage-wise, you're getting some damn good mileage as well, aren't you? Again, we keep on coming back to seat time, but, you know, we're in the realms of, you know, we'll talk about the BRC in a second, because I know that's something that's been quite close to your heart over the years as well, but certainly mileage wise at the moment, and going out and making notes and everything else and testing leading up to those events, you couldn't be in a better place, really, could you?
No. it's awesome. And I'm flying out to Germany in a couple of weeks for a small rally there, and then to the Azores, so just a bit mad, really.
Just keep thinking of it like that. Honestly, just keep thinking about that, and you will just enjoy it. And when you enjoy it, the results will come. So, just coming back full circle, back to your new co-driver as well. Obviously, you and Gabaldon had such a great working relationship, and that must have been a tough split. But obviously, that seat was very, very quickly filled with somebody with a great deal of experience.
Yeah, definitely. Gaban's gone and done doing WRC now with Stefan Lefebvre. Obviously, that's an unreal opportunity, and they're doing really well. But Kat seemed like a mega replacement with a junior team, and we were learning on the first day of the circuit, but the second day went perfectly. We were fastest, so it's all improving pretty quickly, and
have the notes changed much? Because I seem to remember there was bits of English, there was even a flirtation of French occasionally in your notes. So is that changed a little bit now?
They're all full English now.
full English breakfast for notes. There you go. Happy days. So the programme for this year is following the full junior calendar. So it's Azores next. How many rounds? Just remind me. Sorry, Chris, I haven't got it up in front of me at the moment. How many rounds is the juniors?
Yeah. There's six rounds with best four scores. So it's Azores, which is my favourite event. I'm going to push for the win there, because the Adams never won on gravel. So that would be something nice to achieve. I won it last year in the Peugeot.
Have you done any gravel testing yet with the Opel?
No, not yet. But we've got 2 months, so
because it was ironically, even though this is a German engineered car, you've got a fair bit of background with French cars, in that the Twingo and the 208, of course, were developed as tarmac R2 cars more than anything, and then the gravel came, and you're back in the realms of that, really, aren't you, where the Opel's only just starting to get into the realms of competing on gravel. So do you feel comfortable what you've learned over those, the two previous cars in R2s, that you've had to kind of almost develop as you've gone along, working with them on gravel, that you'll be able to take a little bit of knowledge perhaps and maybe add that to the Opel setup?
Yeah, I think you're completely right there. You take, you know, every time you do an event, that's so much experience. So I've done the Azores twice already, come second and first. So I think they've got the right man.
Good
for
man. There you go. Do you know what? Normally that's the bit where I'd go, we'll stop it there. But I don't want to stop it there, because I seen you on Mid Wales, of course, the opening round of the British Rally Championship, and we all know Circuit of Ireland was, of course, the second round. From an outsider looking in, as a man that's competed in it before, and I know, obviously, your dad was highly passionate about the BRC as well back in the day, and also in the way it's been reinvented almost now. Well, it has been reinvented.
Yeah.
What's it like from the outside looking in? Obviously, you're in Europe. How's it being deemed? Has people spoke to you from Germany, perhaps, and asked a question about it? Or is it starting to gather any momentum outside of the UK?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the circuit is probably the first time it's really gone out there to the Europeans. But I think people just can't believe the amount of effort people are putting in, you know, bringing the R5s in. I think there was 38 on the circuit, not all in BRC, obviously, but I think they can't believe it because there's only about 10 R5 cars in Germany.
Wow. I think we're all genuinely staggered, and I think to some degree, even bless me and Scunner Campbell, who's a friend of the show, is, you know, I think they weren't expecting what they've got, but it is a spectacle which is phenomenal. Obviously, you've got the junior package running there as well. Obviously, I'm sure you had a little look at what was going on in the juniors there. Have you got any thoughts about perhaps having a cheeky outing in a BRC round this year?
It's not really my call, but I compared the times because the Vauxhall team were obviously, they did well, but we would have been fastest in the R2, in the R2 section, so it looks really good. But I think there was 18 R2s altogether. The Vauxhall guys won the junior BRC, but on Mid Wales, the Fiesta seemed to do well, didn't they? So, should be a good little challenge.
I think it just looks fascinating. I really do, and I think that we've got a nice mix again of Europeans coming in and doing it. As you say, there's a reasonable mix of cars there. I'm still really, really surprised, and I don't expect you to answer this, but I'm still really surprised that nobody's took a 208 there into the BRC. Now, you've drove one, I know, but I think out of all the R2 cars, I thought that would have been one nailed on, because obviously there's a lot of Fiestas there, which obviously M Sport are on events on the BRC rounds and stuff, so I suppose that makes sense. Obviously, you've got the Vauxhall Adams that have come in, but I was really surprised by no Peugeots.
Yeah, that is true. I think it's just everyone's got, most people go to M Sport over here, don't they? Whereas in France, it's all Peugeot and Citroën and etc.
So we're not going to tempt you out on now. One event you have done the last couple of years, and you've done it in a couple of different cars, was Rally GB. Are you going to be able to swing anything for that this year?
I think so.
You think so? You are the vaguest man in the world, Chris Ingram. Sometimes you really are.
I think it depends if we win the championship.
Okay, no pressure then. I expect you to win the championship because you are our boy in the ERC, so you will be coming back on in a couple of events' time, giving us an update of what's going on. I've just volunteered you for that, by the way. I didn't ask you. I've just volunteered. Now, listen, before I let you go, we've got our giveaway later in the programme that we've been talking about. Have you got dirt yet?
No.
You? Chris Ingram. That is shocking. I thought you would have been there, front of the queue, all over that.
I've been trying to set up my simulator, but I've not come round to it yet.
Okay, well, if you listen back to the podcast, there's going to be a chance for you to win dirt on a PS4 or on an Xbox and signed by all the team that are behind it. So mega. There you go. You need to listen to the podcast and you could be in with a chance of winning it. But I can highly recommend buying it, but it'll do your head in. That's all I'm going to say. I had 2 days of I took out it, probably using the cat as a 10 co-driver was not the best way forward, and the cat got a fair bit of stick off me, I'll be honest with you, I was alright in the front wheel drive car, maybe this speaks volumes, four wheel drive car, I didn't know my backside from my elbow, and rear wheel drive, I just basically spun everywhere. So, story of my life, really. Story of my life. But no, I highly recommend it. I'm not just saying it because we've got Paul Coleman on the programme as well this week. But we're going to be talking more about dirt later on. But listen, Chris, thank you so much for joining us, mate. Listen, congratulations on your second place. Not bad for a first outing, was it?
No, I think it was
good team effort, yeah.
Good man, really, listen, and congratulations on bringing back that name from the past as well, and hopefully that'll prove to be more than valuable as the year goes on for you. But Chris Ingram, thank you so much for joining us, Absolute Rally, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
It's been a busy old show, hasn't it? And to be fair, one thing we probably didn't do was kind of do the winners in Circuits of Ireland. So as I say, we had Craig Breen winning it. We had Scott Martin on talking about that before. We had Sam Moffat, who won the BRC section, and we also had Rob Duggan, who won the BRC junior section. And the name of the guy who beat Chris Ingram, Ryan Champion, will be able to fill in that blank for me now, won't you, Ryan?
No, I won't.
Are you not going to attempt it?
I'm not going to attempt it at all, no.
I wanted you to attempt it. It's Lucas Penizak. There you go. I'm going with Lucas Penizak.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay, and he won the junior section.
For one sort of pronunciation, I'll just let you go with it.
Yeah. You always drop me in it. Anyway, listen, any other business, and there's a couple of pieces of any other business that I wanted to speak about, and one of them was sent in by one of our lovely listeners who's been getting involved in our programme for such a long time, Gary Boyd, who sent us over a story which is possibly being missed, but Gary is one for his rules and regulations, and he sent us over a list of this. Now, it's with regards to WRC coming up, obviously the makeup of how the events are, four tarmac, four gravel, and it's the limitation of transmission, gearbox and front and differential and rear differential and spare parts, which is rule number 6451 for a manufactured WRC team. A list of linked rallies intended to be run with the same transmission for spare parts must be notified to the FIA prior to the first rally in which it will take part. Are you familiar with that ruling, Ryan?
No. No, quite honestly, no. I can't say that's something I've seen. No, go on. Tell me more.
Well, basically, to be fair, Gary, I'm probably not doing this justice from what Gary sent to us. I've just read pretty much it verbatim as it was sent over. And basically, what it is, it's with regards to the limitation, obviously parts and things like that. And as I say, I'm just pulling it up now. And basically, Portugal will be the first of four consecutive European gravel rallies. After that comes four consecutive tarmac rallies. It's about to get interesting to see how regulation 6451 gets played by each team, which form rallies might teams link. It's about linking events and the component lives on the events.
And then presumably is the penalties applied if they have to use more?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask me that. Yes, there will be some penalties, I assume. I'm just looking now. The transmission and turbos must remain sealed until the end of the last rally of the link, except with the approval of an FIA technical delegate. If the seals are found to be destroyed without written permission of the FIA technical delegate, a 5-minute penalty will be imposed by the stewards of the next rally. If the car does not finish a rally of the link, a new transmission of spare parts may be sealed at scrutiny of the next rally.
So are we going to see some tactical retirements then, as we've seen before in F1, if somebody's not had a good event?
I think that's what Gary's perhaps hinting towards. Gary, if we've got your point wrong, by all means, and you always do, you'll put us straight, but I assume that's obviously what your concerns were, which is why you raised our attention to it. But I think it's probably the most complicated any other business we've had.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I think we've just baffled most people.
I think we probably have. I'll be honest, I baffled myself with that one. I baffled myself. My any other business, and I know you've got a few bits and pieces there, was Possum Bourne. Would have been 60 this week. Of course, a man who was synonymous with Subaru.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only synonymous with Subaru, but also a real superstar in New Zealand and also in Australia as well, where he rallied a lot. Probably a big inspiration, I think we've heard before, to Hayden Padden. And Possum spent most of his career in Subarus, RX Turbos, Legacies, Imprezas, and had a great career and had some fantastic results at WRC level, drove for the factory Subaru team, and sad loss, but certainly a great driver.
We tweeted a nice image out that somebody sent us as well, and it kind of sums up Possum in every sense of the word. But a sad loss to the sport. Anyway, you're any other business, young man?
Yeah, well, mine's quite a simple one by comparison to yours. Did you see the 360 camera that the Opel team had as their onboard at the weekend?
I did. Wow. Yeah. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, I did.
Well, I just think linking back to what Paul was saying about virtual reality, and how you're actually in the experience, I thought that was fantastic because, you could actually watch it, you could move around the cockpit, you could have it forward facing, rearward facing, and you look down on the gear stick, and I just thought, what a great thing.
It's, again, we're back in the realms of, is there anything else now that can't be used for rally coverage? Obviously, Periscope was being used also at the weekend. Obviously, they had the live stream, they had radio, obviously the TV package from a couple of TV broadcasters that were there as well. It was like the who's who of broadcasters who were there, and that's why I wasn't there probably, but still there you go. But there's just so much footage available of the circuit of Ireland and new innovative types of footage, as you say.
Yeah, and I think one of the key reasons why it's exciting to me is that rallying's always struggle for coverage because it's difficult to film, difficult to produce a programme about it. Well, now with these new technologies, we're seeing it much easier to produce live images and really exciting footage. So I think it's fantastic for rallying going forwards. We're going to see a lot more live footage. I just think there's a certain promoter of the world's largest championship needs to probably keep up with the game.
Absolutely. Right, well, that's the end of another busy absolute rally in our first programme back, and it's going to start getting busier again, isn't it?
Yep, it's definitely we're back for the next 10 weeks, and a lot's going on in that time. So BRC, we've had two fantastic rallies. We're going to see WRC coming back to life very soon. That was interesting as well to see Hayden Padden out on the Otago Rally at the weekend in his effectively New Zealand developed I-20 as well. That was quite interesting.
I've looked at this a couple of times, and Hayden, there's a nice piece in MN over here in the UK this week by David Evans, who's talking about the hardest working driver, and Hayden Padden purely, he just doesn't let up, does he? Is it a four-wheel drive car, right? What I don't really understand the concept of the car. I'll be honest with you, I've looked at it and I haven't really looked too in depth at it.
In all honesty, I don't know a lot about the technical specification of the car, but yeah, as I understand, it's a low-cost four-wheel drive car. The long-term goal is it'll run into the Asia Pacific 4 category. So at the minute, it's like a non-homologated car, but they're hoping it'll fit into AP4 when it gets a 1.6 litre engine, whereas at the minute it's a 1.8. But the way I understand it is it's a low-cost four-wheel drive car. Yes, R5 is fantastic, and we saw 34 of them at the weekend. I think I've read somewhere this week that there was 50 Fiesta R5s competing worldwide last weekend, which is incredible.
Wow.
Particularly if you're M Sport and answering the phone on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
There's an incredible number of R5 cars out there, but let's not forget, these are expensive cars. They're still the best part of €200,000, and I think Hayden's idea with this car is a low-cost four-wheel drive car that can be run reliably. So, let's see where that goes and learn a bit more about the concepts, and we'll report back when we know a bit more.
Maybe we need to get him on again, because he's always a good sport. He always comes on. Maybe we need to have a chat, maybe leading up to Argentina or something like that. But
that would probably be the best way to find out.
I think
it
probably would be the best way to find out, rather than us kind of almost guessing, I think. This is kind of what's gone on there. But, I think probably getting Hayden on to have a chat. But there you go. Anyway, folks, it is good to be back. Thank you all for downloading our last series, and again, I keep saying this, but it is happening. People are, more and more people are downloading it. The last series was the most downloaded podcast, certainly in my time of producing podcasts, and it's been great, and it's good to be back, and it's good to be talking about rallying again. And where we live, as I say, the Facebook page, facebook.com/absoluterally, or obviously absolute_rally on Twitter as well, and you can fire some bits and pieces there. But the question, obviously posed by Paul Coleman as well, and you may need to do a little bit of research for that one, but we do have two, as I say, signed copies on both Xbox and a PS4 for you to get into, and as I say, can't recommend it enough anyway for rally fans, or indeed, as I said genuinely before, even if you're not into rally, why would you be listening to us anyway? I don't even know why I was about to say that. So
that's a good point,
absolute nonsense of speaking towards the end of a programme. Right, anyway, so that is the end of the programme. It has been an absolute joy. Right, same place next week.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And again, folks, thank you all for downloading the programme. And again, it is good to be back. And this programme's dedicated to John. John, you were great, and I'll miss you. And wherever you are, I hope you're in the apexes.